Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. I got a good feeling about tonight. We've certainly got plenty to discuss. I am Bob Kincaid, by the way. Except no substitutes. Don't try this at home, because I already am. Now, in addition to the phone number, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366, you can, of course, get in touch with the program by email, which, after all, is Bob at headonradio.com. Now, the day ended yesterday with a sort of bated breath waiting to see what the response would be to former Vice President Al Gore coming out and ostensibly speaking truth to power and saying some of what needed to be said. And there was a lot of waiting and wondering, you know, how much coverage the so-called mainstream media would give that speech. And whether or not we would form up our circular firing squad or come out in support of him. Well, the wait is over. Among other things, the sleazebags at the Republican National Committee were ready. Al Gore's incessant need to insert himself in the headline of the day is almost as glaring as his lack of understanding of the threats facing America. While the president works to protect Americans from terrorists, Democrats deliver no solutions of their own, only diatribes laden with inaccuracies and anger.
Really?
I guess anger is illegal now in Dear Leader Land, isn't it? I, for one, am right angry, and have been for quite some time. And, you know, we've talked about it on this program. It has to do with what you're promised and then what you're given. It's the bait and switch. A nation that I was taught growing up was good and righteous and just. And turns out, in the reign of Dear Leader, to be anything but. And, you know, it turns out, well, good and right and just. The missile attack on a sovereign nation, Pakistan, they're in the streets in the hundreds of thousands now in Pakistan. A nuclear country, by the way. A nuclear country whose strongman, Pervez Musharraf, doesn't scare us nearly as much as the idea of Iran getting hold of one, even though there are more, as many or more loony Islamist potential terror-killer types in Pakistan as there are in Iran. You figure it out. No, but it turns out our missile strike there, it killed 17 people. But, it wasn't a total loss. Now we're being told that, well, you know, there were four bad people there that we killed. We killed four bad people. We killed 13 innocents, but we killed four bad people. So it's okay. You know what? When I read crap from the Republican National Committee like that, deliver no solutions of their own, only diatribes laid with inaccuracies and anger. Where was the inaccuracy in Al Gore's speech? I'm waiting. The president is, in fact, spying on the American people, and that is, in fact, in direct contravention of the Constitution, not the least of which part is the Fourth Amendment to that Constitution. But in Dear Leader world, that's inaccuracy, and that's anger. It's just anger. Our good friend Benedict forwarded the RNC response to me. Meanwhile, polling shows Americans support President Bush's decision on wiretapping. A Rasmussen Report survey found 64% of Americans believe the National Security Agency should be allowed to intercept telephone conversations between terrorism suspects in other countries and people living in the United States. That's not the issue. The issue is domestic spying. And the fact of the matter remains that the NSA has been permitted to listen in on conversations of Americans inside this country. The fact remains that the FBI is spying on, for God's sakes, the Quakers. The Quakers. You know, the dude, the people whose progeny is that dude on the oats box. Peaceful people, people who don't believe in war, who don't believe that you can kill somebody just because they don't happen to be quite as pink as you are. Jeez. Lies and inaccuracies and anger. Anybody who is not angry about what's going on in this nation today, well, I don't know, I guess American Idol means more to them. But, you know, 64% of the American people support the Rasmussen survey. Well, how about this? According to the latest Zogby numbers, 52% of the American people believe that George Bush should be impeached. At the same time in history, relatively speaking, only 49% of the American people believed Richard Nixon should be impeached. Of course, Bill Clinton never reached either of those numbers with his little sexcapade. And that's what really, you know, that's what it's all about. It's a, you know, if only George Bush had had oral sex while spying on the American people. Well, then the Republicans would be upset because you know how it is with Republicans and sex, right? Oh, God. It hurts sometimes. But you know, we've got that. I suppose it's probably replaying right now. I caught, I go back and forth through the house. I don't watch a lot of TV. I deliberately try not to watch a lot of TV. But I caught a little snippet of former presidential contender and Ohio laydown artist John Kerry on Wolf Blitzer. And yeah, in case you're wondering, I'm still mad about the way he handled the campaign. He left the field with $40 million still in his war chest. He left the field before the votes in Ohio were counted. That's not fighting for me. He dishonored the people who went door to door. I'm a little worked with John Kerry. And it makes me even more freaked out when I realize that the guy is sitting there thinking, I could be president in 2008. No, you can't, John. No, you can't. You're done. When you let yourself get swift-boated, you were done. Because they'll do it to you again, and, well, maybe not windsurfing this time. Maybe you'll go parasailing. I'm sorry, that's very negative on my part. It's a violation of Reagan's 11th Commandment, thou shalt not... But that's the Republicans. We're Democrats. It's not the circular firing squad. It's pointing out the obvious. And the obvious that I'm talking about here was an appearance, and I don't have the sound. I apologize. But as I was going through the living room, the Situation Room was on with Wolf Blitzer. Thanks, Mike. And the question was put to John Kerry, sir, do you believe that the president is breaking the law? I'm taking this from memory, and I'm pretty sure I'm accurate on this. Do you believe that the president is breaking the law? And without missing a beat, John Kerry said, yes, definitely. Then Wolf Blitzer followed up. Senator Kerry, what is the remedy when the president breaks the law? You know the answer to that. Across this nation, you're all giving the answer. And you don't have the highfalutin education and legal education of John Kerry. You don't have that. That's no insult to you. Most of us don't have the privileges in life that John Kerry had. That's okay. It doesn't mean we can't be smart. So the answer, what is the question, what is the remedy to presidential lawbreaking, has one answer. Impeachment. That is the remedy that the Constitution provides for what happens when a president goes all outlaw, like this one has. What did we get from John Kerry? Well, Wolf, I believe that we should have some hearings. I believe that those hearings should be fair hearings. And in having those hearings, I believe we should seek the facts. Now, I'm sorry if you don't like me coming down on Kerry for this, but I don't, you know, this guy was a prosecutor once upon a time. And when he was a prosecutor and a witness, you know, were you there, you know, and he asked, were you there on Saturday? Well, Saturday's always been one of my favorite days, especially Saturdays with sunshine on them. The sunshiny Saturdays, and maybe a chance to go to the ballpark, you know, eat a hot dog. You know, when you're a prosecutor like John Kerry was, and you ask somebody that question, were you there on Saturday, and you get a 7-minute answer that doesn't answer the question, were you there on Saturday, you have to come back and you ask the question again, were you there on Saturday? Okay? Now, Wolf Blitzer asked John Kerry, what is the remedy in regard to presidential lawbreaking? And John Kerry would not answer that question. Now, going back to our courtroom scenario, when you are a juror sitting in the box and you see someone giving that answer, what do you think about them? When you see a simple question put and the person can't answer the question that is put to them, what do you think about them? You think that they're being something less than honest? Because the answer that Senator Kerry should have given, the answer that he should have given, that any of us would have given, the answer to that question, what is the remedy for presidential lawbreaking? The answer to that question is the remedy to presidential lawbreaking is impeachment. The answer to presidential lawbreaking is impeachment. Now, I don't see where that's so tough to get. But apparently, it is. And it was a shame. I like John Kerry. I worked my little butt off for John Kerry in the last election. But the time has come for men and women in this country to stand up, and when the question is... He wasn't even asked if he thought George Bush should be impeached. He was asked an academic question from the law school classroom. What is the remedy to presidential lawbreaking? And the answer to that, any first-year law student can tell you, is impeachment. And all he had to say was, Wolf, the remedy for presidential lawbreaking is impeachment. Now, I do understand what was going through his mind and why he had to backpedal, because A, he thinks he's still going to get another shot to be president, and B, he knows that they would, you know, the next thing, John Kerry calls for impeachment. That level of dishonesty is CNN's problem, and it's the RNC's problem. And if the American people believe it, it is their problem. John Kerry's problem is answering questions straight up. John Conyers has already called for the possible impeachment of George Bush. He has been joined by a number of heroic and courageous members of the Democratic Party in Congress, 7 or 8. I fired off a letter today to Nick Joe Rahal telling him that I doggone well expect to see his name as a co-sponsor of that House legislation. If we sit around here and we worry about what kind of lies Karl Rove will tell, or what kind of smarmy, filthy press release we'll get from the Republican National Committee, like this hatchet job they introduced today against Al Gore's speech yesterday, if we spend our time worrying about that, I submit to you, we are done. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
I suppose it's entirely possible that I'm wrong on this. I suppose it's entirely possible that when it comes to speaking out, I should be a little bit more forgiving. You know, Kerry on CNN was queried as to what he felt about what Hillary said about the Bush administration, the plantation remark. And he said, yeah, they're corrupt. This is a corrupt administration, no doubt about it. And that's fine. But it's not cause for celebration. It's not cause for, running out into the street, woo, we're back, baby, we're going to win now. No! Because you still have to get to that place. You got to get to that place where you can say the I word. Don't you love the fact that it is so, we're so terrified of it that in postings, the articles, whatever you see on the internet, it's referred to that way, the I word, just like they called it liberal, the L word. Funny, they don't have any problem with the K word, kill. But if we want to talk about impeaching a criminal president, it's the I word. It is that thing which dare not speak its name. Isn't it just a little bit sickening after a while? Do you get a little bit tired of this media game and this political game where people are afraid to speak the truth? You know, I mean, that's why we're here every night. You, me, us. We're into truth. We are into facts, and we talk about facts when we have them available to us. And the fact is, this president is attempting the absolute destruction of the republic. That's not to say that down through the ages it has, others haven't as well. The historians argue that Abraham Lincoln was the first president to run out and take a really give the Constitution a really swift kick, and there's probably truth in it. And they talk of what FDR did with the New Deal, and they say that that was another erosion of the Constitution as it was written, and that may be true. And inevitably Nixon comes up, but right here, right now, we are facing more problems and more threats to our constitutional form of government than have ever been manifested, because this is the end game. If George Bush is permitted to get away with this, the republic is done, because the powers he seeks will be passed on to some other president, be it Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. And the Congress will have been rendered irrelevant. The courts, they won't be rendered irrelevant. We've got Clarence Thomas and Scalia and Roberts, and they want the court to be irrelevant. You see. So that's what makes it so important when one of our leaders won't say impeachment when he is called simply to say that word. He wasn't called upon to ask for the impeachment of George Bush. He was simply asked what the remedy is for presidential lawbreaking, and he couldn't do it. It's that simple. So we'll take a break, and we'll come back, and your phone calls right away. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah!
using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to three lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
The rope that's wrapped around me is cutting through my skin, and the doubts that I've surrounded me finding their way in. I keep it close to me like a holy man prays in my desperate hour. It's better, better that way. So I'll come by and see you again. I'll be such a very good friend. Have mercy on my soul. I will never let you know where my mind has been. Angels never came down. There's no one here. They wanna hang around. But if they knew you at all, then one by one, the angels, angels won. Temple, I have slept upon your pew. I have dreamed of the divinity inside and out of you. I wanted more than truth. I can taste it on my breath. I would give my life just for a little death. So I'll come by and see you again. I'll be just a very upon your face, I will not touch upon your grace, your ecclesiastic skin. Angels never came down. There's no one here. They wanna hang around. But if they knew you at all, then one by one, the angels, angels would fall. See you again, and I'll have to be a very good friend. If I whisper, they will know. I'll just turn around and go. You will never know my sin. Angels
Welcome back. 23 minutes and change before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to start off all strident and stuff. That's spooky, isn't it? Let's go straight to the phones. Jeff is with us, calling from Pennsylvania. Hey, Jeff, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. You?
Not too bad. I got really fired up yesterday after listening to Gore's speech, and decided to get my letter off to Snarl and Arl Inspector and try and convince him that he might want to go down in a blaze of glory and actually do something for the Commonwealth.
Well, you know, I don't mean to be unfair, Jeff, but, you know, this man has faced, he has stared down death in the last year.
Yeah.
In the form of that prostate cancer, and apparently it was no easy road.
Well, I'm hoping that will be an influential factor in him actually doing something to serve the state, serve the nation.
Right.
And, you know, really, I put it on the line. I mean, you know, there's almost no question, you know, anybody who's paying attention knows that, you know, we've got an administration in power that has no respect for the Constitution, has no understanding of it, and, you know, they're just out to do what they want to do. And, you know, I of course, threw in, you know, my opinion of Alito, and basically the guy has decided every case that he's seen in the Third Circuit, pretty much, you know, on the side of wealth and power.
Right. I mean, that's his job. I mean, that's where he comes from. So, you know, it shouldn't surprise us. But Jeff, by the same token, you know, when you mention Specter, you know, he was the first one who used that, you know, I hate that euphemism, the I word. He's the first one who said impeachment. He said it Sunday.
Yeah, and I heard that he had a really hard time getting the words out.
He did, and he also, you know, he went on and said, yeah, but nobody's really talking about that around here. You know, he apparently doesn't pay much attention to what goes on in the House, or he'd know about John Conyers' bill.
Well, yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, and I've been signed up on Conyers' bill for almost from day one. So, I definitely hope that we see a big change coming around in the next few days.
Do you have your congressman? You're member of the House of Representatives, Jeff. Democrat or Republican?
Republican.
You know, you can still send the letter. You know.
Well, I have, and you know, I've made a few phone calls and. Response has been slim to none, and unfortunately, over the past couple of weeks, we had county commissioners deciding on which voting machines they were going to buy.
Oh, God.
And I went down to the hearing when they had their county commissioners meeting, and I've got a background in electronics, so I made my disagreement with their choice based on that. And there were, you know, more than a few other people there who had been pretty well researched and had all the background in the not only the ownership of the company but all the problems that have been documented around the country with the machines that we're going to buy, and they just basically, okay, fine, we heard what you had to say and we're going to buy what we want to buy. So, you know, we filed a complaint against them.
Good.
To contest the decision. Who knows how it'll go? I mean, but
well, you know, our friend Fritz out in New Mexico. You may have heard him call a couple of times. He's involved in one of those fights out there. One of those, and it's almost the same scenario, Jeff. It's a county commission that says we don't care how much data, we don't have care how much evidence you have that these machines are corrupt and dirty. We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, well, what I thought was really interesting was, you know, the Board of Elections Commissioner had been given information from you know, just regular citizens, independent citizens that were just interested in making sure that, you know, things were done in the most straightforward and transparent fashion possible. And she had been, you know, getting all this information from all the resources around the country, and the county commissioners just really didn't care. It's like, I don't want to hear it, you know. I don't have time for this, you know.
Well, you know, maybe the day has come when the folks in your county don't have time for them anymore, too.
Well, that's pretty much the case. When I sat down with the county commissioners' meeting, she happened to be right behind me, and I didn't realize it. And she made a smart comment when one of the people was up there, and I turned around and gave her a steely-eyed look that I wouldn't want to see it myself.
Good for you.
But, you know, all we can do is keep on keeping on.
Absolutely. We can't. This is no, you know, this is no time for quitters. We had that quote a couple of times last night talking about Dr. King, about what is it, the soft drug of gradualism. We can't afford that luxury.
No.
It's time to separate the wheat from the chaff, Jeff.
Yeah, well, my parents have gone through a lot of pain to get us here, and my grandparents the same.
Yeah.
And
kind of owe it.
I don't mind taking a few shots myself.
Right. So. We owe it to them, and we owe it to the future.
Absolutely.
Jeff, so good to hear from you. I hope you can continue the fight and keep us posted, will you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. And let's see. Jim. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Yes. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Yeah. I just saw Senator Kerry on television answering some of Wolf Blitzer's questions.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the statement unequivocally that this administration had been the most seriously derelict in its duty to the welfare of the American people.
Yes, he did.
Verbatim, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Kerry is a patrician and a very reserved person. And it is in his nature not to make statements that he can't call back. Now, Blitzer was trying to lead him right down the primrose path to saying impeach Bush.
Well, but see, that's not the question he asked him, Jim.
Well, I know that.
The question he asked him is, what is the remedy?
That, Bob. I understand. I know what he asked him. I heard you.
Well, good. Then
now,
why couldn't he give a straight answer to that question?
He said, Mr. Blitzer, you are going at me tonight. And if I were John Kerry, I would have said the same thing. I wouldn't have said that, because look where that's leading him in the long run.
Well, where the only
it's not doing him or us any good to make a statement like that, because it's provocative and it's leading.
So we can't be provocative anymore. Is that it?
I think that there's a time to be provocative. There's a time to be circumspect.
And when is that provocative time, Jim? That's all I want to know.
Well, I'm going to have to, you know, I cannot live inside John Kerry's mind, and I am not in his position. But I'm simply saying I can understand why he said what he did.
I understand, too. He still thinks he can be president.
I don't think that has anything to do with it right now. I really don't. Mr. Kerry has too much left in his life other than having that awful, responsible job.
Well,
I think that possibly, you know, he may have changed his mind about it. Now, moving on to other things, please. With Senator Hillary Clinton's comment about the House of Representatives being treated like a plantation.
Yeah.
Well, that statement originally came back in 1994 from Newt Gingrich, because he's the one who said that the House of Representatives was being treated by the Democrats like a plantation, and he wanted to lead the slave revolt.
I know.
So, I mean, I don't know why they're jumping all over her saying that.
Well, why did they jump all over the Democrats last week when Lindsey Graham made Mrs. Alito cry? Remember that?
Well, obviously nerves are being hit.
Sure it is.
And, you know, these people up there they realize that they're being discovered what they are.
Right, and then, you know,
last night, you know, I think half of the government is either stupid, incompetent, and the other is criminal. And for some of the stuff that's happened.
Well, you know, Al Gore in his speech, Jim, Al Gore in his speech yesterday pulled no punches. He said, with regard to either party, it's time for Congress to start being Congress and quit being a lapdog to the executive branch, and that anybody who doesn't feel that way should get the hell out.
Well, you know, basically, as far as a lot of people who are sitting in the Congress, it's whores of the world unite. You know that.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, I used to use the expression, if But, you know, there are certain things that if they hang around long enough, they'll gain respectability. Old buildings, whores, and politicians. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to drop the last one from that expression. But, I mean, you know, I think what has happened recently, and they're all running for cover ever since Tom DeLay and Abramoff and these people are being discovered for what they are, and Hastert and all these people, and, you know, even, John McCain said, all you know, he's been calling for this lobbyist reform for years, and now they're all of a sudden running for it as if, you know, it's the latest thing since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, these people have been there, many of them, to serve their own interests and not the interests of the people, except every 2 and every 6 years. And
well, there was a memo that went out from...
I really think it's time to dump a whole bunch of them. I really do.
I agree. And, of course, they've made it, and you and I have discussed this in the past, it is statistically more difficult to unseat an incumbent member of Congress than it was in the old Soviet Union to remove a member of the Politburo.
I'm not sure where you get that fact from, but I guess you're probably right. I'm not going to question you on that.
It was an old election study, but it was back during the when the Soviet Union still existed.
Well, that's fine.
I take it as probably, even if it's apocryphal, it sounds like truth.
It must have been the latter days of the Politburo, because under Stalin it was pretty easy to unseat one, I understand.
Well, that's true too.
this must have been under Brezhnev.
Yeah, take him away. What I was going to mention a minute ago, a memo went out from Harry Reid's chief of staff telling lobbyists that they may not give any member of Harry Reid's staff any sort of a gift anymore. And, you know, that I saw that this morning, and it was rattling the political world. Why, this is reform, by Jove. Can you imagine that?
Well, why just Harry Reid's staff?
Well, I mean, it was just something that that they did.
And which lobbyist was it?
Well, any lobbyist.
Any lobbyist. Now, whose office issued this directive?
Harry Reid's.
Okay. In other words, he told his people they can't accept any gifts from lobbyists except maybe a T-shirt.
No T-shirts.
Not even baseball caps or T-shirts.
No ball caps, no golf clubs, no tees, no bottles of liquor, no nothing.
Not even a $20 dinner at a hamburgers or whatever.
No. And I think that's the way it ought to operate. You know, when we talk about reform, Jim, reform is easy. The people who advocate in favor of the Ten Commandments, one of the beauties of the Ten Commandments on its face is that they're very clear, plain statements. Now, if you follow up with the rest of the Mosaic Law, that's where, you know, well, thou shalt not kill, but if, and thou shalt not covet, yada, yada, but if. If we crafted a simple law that said thou shalt not take a gift from anyone while thou art in Congress, that covers all the bases, doesn't it?
Well, if you can enforce it, but I'll tell you, that law will be just about as enforceable as prohibition was.
Because congressmen are fundamentally corrupt?
No, because they're human beings. And that's just the nature of the beast there. I mean, it would take more than, I mean, people with good intentions pass laws that are called reforms. The Volstead Act was a reform, right?
True enough.
To stop the sale and consumption of spirits, but it really created more problems than it ever solved.
So
and
then,
I think any type of law like this, if they were to pass it, they couldn't enforce it. Bob, you know they couldn't.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say, Jim. If you pass a law that says, well, you know, you can take $49 gifts, but you can't take $51 gifts, and, you know, you can travel 400 miles, but you can't travel 500 miles on the corporate jet, yeah, that's never going to be enforceable. Because you're right, it is in the nature of humankind to look for excuses for their wrongdoing.
No, I mean, you can. What you can do is limit. And limit was in serious, within a limited amount of reasonability, like trips to the St. Andrews Golf Course in Scotland.
Right.
And, you know, the terrific abuses that have occurred. I mean, we're not talking about power lunches. We're talking about millions of dollars.
Well, yeah. And
Now, we can certainly do something about that. And, you know, I'm saying, you know, and of course, if you see it in the light of right or wrong, like degrees of pregnancy, well, you see it that way, but I think we're going to have to be a little more gradual in the reform of something that's been around so long.
Well, you know, I heard...
Or it doesn't work at all.
Unfortunately, I heard a little bit of Flush Flembaugh a week or so ago, and he actually blamed the delay scandal on John McCain. If it hadn't been for all of this McCain-Feingold reform, then Tom DeLay never would have turned into a scabrous, filthy, corrupt, greedy little thing that he is.
Why did he say that? I mean...
Well, because it added another layer, and it just made it more confusing, and it brought more lobbyists into play. Now, I'm not kidding, Jim. I mean, that's the reasoning we're dealing with on the other side. That's why I'm saying we have to take a Ten Commandments approach to it. It has to be, you know, really short. Thou shalt not do A. Thou shalt not do B.
I non-concur, my friend, because I realize that, you know, it sounds great and it looks great, but it isn't great because it's not going to work. And you're going to have probably out of it more corruption and other ways. They'll find some way to get around it. If you try to be that draconian in your approach to it.
Well, what if the punishment attached to the
I mean, you want to make it death?
Yeah, why not? I mean, for the sake of argument, why not? We're always told by the right wing that the death penalty is a great deterrent to murder in the United States.
Well, it's not.
If that's true, then it's a great deterrent to taking bribes too, isn't it?
Well, it's not. It's not. I mean, you could say, well, we'll cut off your right hand the way they do in Saudi Arabia. I don't know. But what I'm just saying is, you know, I understand why you're saying what you're saying, but hear me out and understand why I'm saying what I'm saying. It ain't going to work. You're going to have to take another approach, a more gradual approach, and one that's really aimed at the huge amounts of effort that have contributed to this culture of corruption.
Well, I understand. You know, we're talking in.
I mean, you don't want to. I mean, you know,
we're talking in philosophical terms here, Jim.
The operation, okay?
Yeah, we're talking.
It's supposed to help and cure. It's not supposed to. It's supposed to be palliative, not punitive.
Well, I understand that, but you just said that the approach has to be gradual, and this after last night's discussion and that one quote from Dr. King about gradualism.
Well, I mean,
and the poison of it.
Well, I understand Dr. King's, but in relation to that speech, it was made in April of 19. Let's see.
Well, the gradualism comment was made during his "I Have a Dream" speech.
Okay.
That's August of 1963.
Well, now what was he talking about?
He was talking about the move towards civil rights, that we couldn't gradually integrate schools, that we couldn't gradually bring minority Americans into the political process, that it had to be all or nothing.
Now, you know, Brown versus Board of Education.
All deliberate speed.
In 1955.
Yeah.
Now, the schools in South Carolina did not integrate until 1970. Now,
right, because of that one deadly phrase in that decision, to move with all deliberate speed, when the definition of deliberate is to move slowly.
Well, sometimes you have to move cautiously, and you have to, if you're going to, change that is accelerated sometimes doesn't work as well as change that comes at a more moderately paced tempo.
Okay. Well, I understand that. Hey, Jim, I appreciate the time, and I appreciate your thoughts.
By the way, Al Sharpton certainly had a lot of good things to say about what Senator Clinton said, because he certainly agreed with it.
He was dandy today.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely was. Jim, have a great night.
Hey, likewise. You too.
Take care. And quickly, let's roll on to Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Jim. Oh, Bob?
Yeah, Bob here.
Okay.
I'm Bob.
Bob?
Yeah.
Cool. I want to talk. Well, I just want to say something to Jim, okay?
Oh, okay. I got you. Now the confusion is over. Go ahead.
Oh. Damn.
I'm easily confused.
I guess so. But Jim is, I don't know. I'm tired of listening to that Nazi. I really am, okay? He talks. He ain't in the boot. He ain't in the boot, Bob. He hasn't been there in the grinder when we took down the Vietnamese, when we did what we did in Vietnam. Okay?
Okay.
Jim wasn't there.
It's my understanding that he was.
Oh, he was. Well, I was with the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, okay?
Mm-hmm.
9th Marine Amphibious Brigade. We were called the 9th MAB, okay? The 9th MAB.
Okay.
And I was with the 1st Battalion, 3rd Delta Company.
All right.
And I did things that Jim talks about. But I don't hear it. I don't hear it in my soul. I don't feel it. I just hear words. I hear something else. I hear propaganda from Jim. He comes out with these things and he beats on you, son. But you are the prince of the airwaves to me.
Well, thank you.
No, you are. You're the prince of the airwaves. The king is Mike Malloy. He comes up with the truth and he spits it out. He was back in the day.
Yeah, and that's
like I was.
Yeah, that's and I'm younger. There's no doubt about that.
You're a young man, and you got a beautiful young lady. I love hearing her voice. Agnes should get on there and holler at you more.
you know not what you speak.
Yes, yeah, get on there and holler at you more. Just say, Bob, sometimes you got to slap them back. You got to talk back to them. You got to tell them, okay, if they're giving you a snow job, you know, like
mm-hmm.
they're trying to feed you a line from the Pentagon, like Jim comes right down that line, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Jim do. And I'll give you my phone number, Bob, so that Jim can call me and talk to me personally. Or you could, you know, hook me up with him, because I'd like to put a boot into Jim's snoot. Well, I wouldn't say anything nasty, but I want to say this. Jim, you speak, but you don't speak for me. You don't speak for the guys that I fought side by side with. And, you know, there were times, Bob, when I looked down that line and there was just one pink face in the bunch, because I never thought of myself as a white man. Because
mm-hmm.
I heard what happened when I come home and my brothers that died in that awful place. Most of them, their skin was black, but their blood was red. Their blood was red, and sometimes I had it on me.
Oh, God.
No, it has nothing to do with God, it has everything to do with who we are. Who we are. Okay, Bob?
Yeah.
I mean, you call yourself Bob. I call myself Bob. My first name is Robert.
Mm-hmm.
There is this Robert. I know that from Mike. He gave it to me.
Yeah.
And you are my prince. And I will follow you. Like into that dark place. I was there once, and I will not for my children, not for one moment, fall back into play that game. Now it's for real. Al Gore called us to battle. He did. He said what he said, and it was truth. And speak truth of power, Bob. Continue to do it and continue to speak it. And do not let them, oh God, they tore you out of that place that you were in, but you come back with a stronger voice, son. And you continue to slam back at them. And don't you ever stop, okay, for your children's sake and mine and my grandchildren's sake. And I pray for you, son, and I pray for Jim that he will pull his head straight out of his whatever. Okay, I'm not going to say the word.
Okay, appreciate it.
Because it's not good on here.
All right.
But it is the truth. Jim, you call me. I'll give it to Agnes after Bob takes me up.
We will put you on hold.
My number.
Okay. Okay.
So that Jim can call me. I'll give it to Agnes, and she can give it to Jim, and he can call me, and we will talk about old times in the Nam, in the Vietnam. No, not in the sweet Vietnam that he talks about, how we were, you know, because I was there during that election. I sat on a hill. I sat on a hill during that election of 67, okay?
Yeah.
I sat on it, and my friends were killed as the Viet Cong slammed them with mortars, and then they overran Charlie Company, and they came up on Delta, and we slammed them back, okay? And we picked their poor brown bodies up in the morning, and we put them in our trenches, and we covered them with the dirt that we had dug the day before that election in 1967 when Martin Luther King was dead. That great man died that we, my black brothers and I, could kill little brown people and put them into our diggings and cover them just like they did those miners down there where you're at, Bob. So forgive me.
No forgiveness necessary.
Forgive me for my anger. Forgive me for my youthful indiscretion. But Jim needs to come up because he has to pull his head straight out of his whatever orifice he's got it in and stand up for this country and stop standing up for Republicans.
Ask no absolution and ask no forgiveness because you don't.
Your words, Bob.
Yeah.
Republicans. Skin them, cook them, fry them. This might be tasty on a barbecue.
Thanks so much. I don't know how to respond to half of what you said except to say that I'm proud to know you, and I'm proud to know you're there. And I'm proud to know that there are still people like you in America.
Son, I'm proud that your father sired you. I am really proud of that. And you just keep kicking that Republican butt because I've been working on it. In this state, it's redder than hell.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, guess what?
What?
They see me coming. The Republicans, they duck and cover. I mean, they do.
I don't doubt it, and I'm glad that you can be out there and you can do that.
Hey, like Clyde said, okay, on his email, when he emailed me back, he said something like, what Clyde say? He says, keep up the good fight, okay?
Yeah.
But let's keep it up for Martin and Bobby, okay?
Yeah.
And for John. And for that other one, that one was standing by him as they were going over the hill. Has anybody here seen my old friend John?
Yeah.
I seen him walking up over the hill. Okay?
Okay.
With Barton. And who did he walk over the hill with? Abraham and John. That's who Bobby walked over the hill with. Good men that died for a cause or not a cause. I don't know. But Martin is by far the greatest spokesman for the common man that has ever come along. And when I die, bury me black, okay? I may be as pink as you.
Mm-hmm.
says, you ain't a white man. I ain't never seen a white man.
Absolutely.
Because white is without color. But I was always pink. Sometimes I'd get a little tanned in the sun.
I've never, you know, you're right. I've never seen a white guy, and I've never seen a black person.
That's right.
It's all.
It always was ebony to me, and ebony is beautiful. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, and Bob. Good night. And tell. Oh, I will give Agnes my number.
Jim, she's going to put you on hold.
Hey, if Jim has the courage, if he has the courage to call me. I'll give Agnes my number, and she can have Jim.
Well, we're going to put you on hold straight away and take a break. She'll get your number, and you can go from there. Thank you for all your words, and thank you for all of your spirit and all of your heart.
Hey, I have no heart. I have it's broken. It's been ripped in so many pieces, Bobby. So many pieces. And I'm sick to death of hearing people tell me that we're supposed to take it easy on them, slam them back because, damn it, they ain't gonna give us they're not gonna give us a breath. So let's get them running, and then, like, what was that guy that great Southern general said? Keep up the skeer.
Yep.
Keep up the skeer. You got them skeered. Keep up the skeer. Okay. And he sent his boys into battle, and the Northern destroyed them. Just ripped them up. I think I can't remember the battle. I'm thinking of, you know, when they were in the woods and they were.
Well, it happened dozens of times. You know, and that's one of the lessons. If we can get these people on the run, and it was a mistake we made the last time through. If we get them on the run, we got to track them down and finish them.
Oh, son, get after them. Just slam them down. Don't do like Abe did back there at Gettysburg. Okay.
All right.
He said, leave them go. And they let them cross the river. They should have chased them Rebs back into Virginia and just slaughtered them as they went. But they just, you know, okay. You know, it was enough. And Bobby Lee and all his... Bobby Lee was a good man, but he took the wrong side in the fight. He should have fought for the abolition of slavery because... Bob, they've enslaved everybody since.
I share that in many ways. We've got to take our break, but so good to hear from you, and I hope we'll hear from you again.
Well, hey, give me Agnes. You can have my number, and you can call me anytime.
All right. Stand by, all right?
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks
for your time.
Thank you.
We ran over the break. That was important, and that was worth doing it for. We've got to take our break now. We'll be back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I used to be such a sweet, sweet if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, do they, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? Why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Thanks for sticking around. Appreciate it. I'm Bob. This is Head On. The phone number, you know that. It's 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. What you just heard, if you were with us, and the reason that I didn't stop and take the break, what you just heard is the reality of talk radio. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what... Well, I've mentioned from time to time that I really do want to redesign what we call talk radio. I want conversation radio. Because you know what? Everybody that calls this show is every bit as important and has as valid a point of view. Because this is a liberal show. This is a progressive show. This is a show that is designed to appeal to intelligent people. And I am blessed with many, many intelligent people in this audience. And as such... everything you have to say is as important as anything that might come on high from somewhere inside the Beltway. This idea that we have created primarily with the 24-hour news cycle that somehow or another only certain people have valid opinions, and we've gone into the opinion business. America happens in conversations at the checkout line, at the gas pump. America happens or used to happen on front porches. That is where the opinion that matters comes from. Not from some highfalutin dude at the, the Heritage Foundation or the Cato Institute. Those are overpaid people who probably couldn't change their own tires if they had to. Real opinion comes from real people. And that's who I want to talk to. A couple of emails that I was able to print off during the break. One from our friend David in near Nashville. Bob, please take heart. The tilted, stilted national media does not know or feel anything for or about Al's call to arms. But wait, America, our America, the real one, heard it. Give it a few days. A groundswell just might develop. A parade of real and true Americans, not Bushmurricans, will come together and start to move, maybe even march. Then you'll see the media rush, and I mean run, to the front of the parade so they can lead, wait, and watch. Shall we encourage a few timid elected officials that should step out, wanting them to realize a ton of us will be there for them? Why, of course we should. He says, keep up the good work, and adds... When, Jim? When is it going to be okay with you to fight? And a note from last night's program from our friend John. I'm listening to Martin talk about the Vietnamese children begging the American soldiers for food and women prostituting themselves to survive. Never mind his elegance. What about the stark truth of that portrait? What warm-blooded human being can't recognize the tragedy in that scene? Contrast that with Mrs. Alito, so morally bankrupt that she, at her age, would disgrace herself with an orchestrated cry and flee. Compare these soulless ghouls to Dr. King. Pathetic. Yeah, it is, John. Yeah, it is. And the whole point with playing the excerpts last night from that speech, I said it again and again, and I don't know if it's good. Nothing. For some people in this country, nothing has changed. The Bush family has been riding on one long, cresting wave of opulence and wealth and privilege, and so have other Americans, while so many of us have only been at the base of that wave. What difference is it to a Bush if the orphaned little girls who are prostituting themselves are Vietnamese or Iraqi? What difference to a Bush? What difference? What difference to a Bush if a young black man comes home in a box from Vietnam or comes home in a box from Iraq? What difference to a Bush? No difference, you see. Let's go to the phones. Our friend Gene has been waiting, calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Well, I'm going to change the subject on you here just a little bit.
Well, that's okay.
I did something today that was a little bit, well, it's not life-threatening. I hope not, anyway. I actually called my Republican senator.
Oh, my God.
Senator Smith.
Did you feel like you needed a shower or something after?
Well, not exactly. I got his answering machine, so I didn't talk to him directly. I was lucky. But I asked him to actually oppose Alito, or at least not vote for him. I said if he wouldn't vote for him, I might contribute to his campaign. I think $5 is like, well, what the heck. If he actually opposed him and voted against him, I'll vote for him.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea.
Well, you know, that's a very novel approach that you mentioned there, Gene. The idea of abstention.
Yeah.
If Chafee and Snow and Collins and these other Republicans who are supposed to be moderate don't feel that they can stand with us on a filibuster and don't feel like they can stand against Alito, the least they can do is stand silent.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, lead follower, get out of the way, I guess, is the theory behind that.
Yeah, I figured I had to do something because I didn't want to. I called in twice because the first time I was like, well, I'll consider voting for you. But I thought, well, I figured this way. I don't have any money to buy a senator, obviously, but I figured at least if he voted the way I wanted him to, then I could at least give him my vote. I know that's not a lot nowadays, unfortunately, but that's what I did. I don't know.
Well, until they take the franchise from you, Gene, it's what you've got to fight with.
Yeah, and that's what I did. And other than that, I've just been sending you the stuff. It was kind of bizarre on the gaming thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching out, and I've been doing the best I can with what I've got. So I'm still used to the 4-minute talk cycle, so I'll...
That's okay. You take care, Gene.
Okay.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
That is, that's a fascinating idea. It's perhaps a bit of a... is it hopeless? I don't know. But these moderate Republicans, the least they can do is get out of the way. If they won't stand with us and won't stand for America, they can get the hell out of the way. But never mind the moderate Republicans. Guess what? It's apparently official. Ben Nelson, erstwhile Democrat of Nebraska, has come out and said there will be no filibuster and that he will, in fact, vote for Samuel Alito. Did you get that? That's a Democrat saying that. He was one of the Gang of 14, remember? The ones who put off the constitutional crisis over the last filibuster and whether or not Democrats would be allowed to even voice dissent to the decisions of Dear Leader. Ben Nelson has said that he's tired of the fight. Ben Nelson has said he's giving up. Ben Nelson has said he surrenders. Not Bill Nelson. I'm not talking about the Florida guy. I'm talking about the guy in Nebraska that calls himself a Democrat, Ben Nelson. And if you go to the DLC, the Democrat Leadership Council's homepage, you'll find that Ben Nelson was their DLC-er of the month back in June 2005. What use, and I know we've got a couple of listeners in Nebraska, what use do you have for a Democrat who will not be a Democrat? This isn't, understand, I suppose that to a certain extent with this program I preach to the converted some, or preach to the choir, depending on your preference of analogy. Opposing Samuel Alito is not about opposition for opposition's sake. We gave George Bush John Roberts. We saw John Roberts in action today, didn't we? Oregon's, I should have asked Gene about it while I had him on the line. He's from Oregon. Oregon's assisted suicide law was upheld today. No matter the screeching and screaming of, you know, first it was John Ashcroft, that sad, sick freak. And then it was Alberto Gonzalez, who said that the people of Oregon do not have the right to control their own lives. Who said that the state knows better than the individual how long they should suffer before they die. It was the Bush administration, it was Gonzalez, it was Ashcroft who said, well, you know, Jesus wants you to suffer when that cancer is ravaging your body. And no, you can't take a larger than a normal dose of some painkiller that will just let you go to sleep and end the misery. No, no. God, I remember when Ronald Reagan was talking that silly horse hockey about, well, we're going to get the government off your back. Sunshine, when the Republican Party's telling me that I don't have the right to choose the time of my own end when I am mortally, gravely sick, that is the very epitome of government on my back. Now, what has this got to do with John Roberts? John Roberts, of course, and you already know who dissented from this opinion. It was a 6-3 opinion. You know who the three the bubble-headed idiots were who dissented from this. You know that it was Clarence Thomas. You know that it was Antonin Scalia. And you know that it was John Roberts. Deferring, bowing down to the will of the government. Opposing the right of individual Americans to simply live and, in this case, die free. John Roberts has already shown his true colors. John Roberts was confirmed to the Supreme Court in part by the vote of my senator. Wasn't he? Did Robert Byrd vote for him? If I'm wrong, tell me. There has got to come a point where Democrats stop enabling these monsters. That was a 6-3 decision, and it was a 6-3 decision only because Sandra Day O'Connor was still there at the point that the decision was rendered. So take away one vote in that 6-3 decision. It's really a 5-3 decision. Add Alito. It's a 5-4 decision. We are a heartbeat away from full-blown goose-stepping fascism in this country, and the enablers of that fascism are Roberts and Scalia and Thomas and soon Alito if we do not stop him. There is no honesty, there is no integrity, there is no decency in Samuel Alito. And I have no regard for anyone who calls themselves a Democrat who will vote for him. How about you? Can you stomach a Ben Nelson? I've seen him on TV a few times, and he stands there with that politician smile, and this is nothing against the Midwest, but that glad-handing, baby-kissing, Midwestern smile. Well, yes, sir, I'm a member of the Democratic Party. I am indeed. I am a proud Democrat. I am a proud member of the Democratic Leadership Council. What, you want me to act like one? Screw you. I'm going to vote for Judge Alito. Holy hell. So we got a little taste, just a little nip of John Roberts today. Remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew this is Head On. I had my chance. I'm Bob Kincaid. That I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. But something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Did you write the book of love? And do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so. And do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow?
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Nothing scares power-hungry politicians more than someone who represents a real threat to their authority. The USA is supposed to be a nation with the laws more important than any one person, no matter how powerful. But anyone who's studied our history knows that powerful and ambitious people think they're above the law and will use any means necessary to get rid of troublemakers. President Bush thinks he's a dictator. You don't have to believe me. He said so himself when he said he had the right to break the law if he felt it was necessary for national security. The question is, how far will he go? As others have pointed out, just because he hasn't, say, started throwing troublemakers like me into prison isn't relevant. According to Mr. Bush, if he thought it was necessary, he would just do it and worry about the consequences later. That's what bothers me about Judge Alito. He said he believes in the rule of law, but what's to prevent him from interpreting the law as saying that the president can do whatever he wants? When the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution, they wrote it to prevent that kind of power from falling into the hands of one person or a small group of people. If the Republicans maintain their control of the House and Senate and are backed by a Supreme Court filled with judges who support Mr. Bush more than they support the Constitution, then none of us is safe. Because people who ask for that kind of power only do so if they plan on using it. And they usually do. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
If the savage one is me, how can there be so much that you don't know? You don't know. You think you own whatever land you land on. The earth is just a dead thing you can claim. But I know every rock and tree and creature has a life, has a spirit, has a name. You think the only people who are the people who look and think like you. But if you walk the footsteps of a stranger, you'll learn things you never knew, you never knew. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue horn moon? Or asked the grinning bobcat why he grinned? Can you sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind? Can you paint with all the colors?
Welcome back. Pocahontas. How about that?
Okay, Bob does not like Pocahontas, okay?
Well, no. I mean, it's just, well, whatever. 26 minutes before the hour. We're halfway done tonight. Blows my mind. Let's go back to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, first thing like that, what a hell of a show.
Thanks.
This is a great show. But I've probably said that before. But now, me and you are going to get in an argument.
We are.
Did you just say something about we don't want to fill or we don't want to be the opposition for opposition's sake? What did you say?
I said Alito, opposing Alito is not about opposition for opposition's sake. There are real valid reasons from stopping this man from getting on the court.
Oh, well, see, I agree and disagree.
Okay.
We have to oppose this guy.
Yes.
I don't care what anybody thinks, you know, and if that's for opposition's sake, then that's what it's got to be. We have nothing to lose. Absolutely nothing to lose. What are you going to take away from us? Are you going to do the nuclear option? I dare you. I dare you to take it away because we're going to take control of the Congress and probably the Senate here shortly. Then you won't have a nuclear option.
No, but that's what scares me. As long as there are Ben Nelsons out there, you know, so-called moderates.
Bob, don't be afraid. That's what the opposition for opposition's sake is. We have to find out who's with us and who isn't. And this is the defining moment. Ben Nelson isn't with us. You don't have to. There's no great test. Well, the tests have been conducted and proven. Ben Nelson isn't a Democrat.
No. I know. Some people. I'm reminded. There's a Bible verse out there where it says, you know, you are neither hot nor cold. You were lukewarm, and I spit you out of my mouth. Ben Nelson is lukewarm. I'm sick to death, Wayne, with lukewarm Democrats.
Well, and so am I. And that's why we have to have this opposition, because we have to find out who's lukewarm and who isn't. And if you're not behind this filibuster, and if you vote for Judge Alito, you will never get another vote from me. And that includes Senator Rockefeller and Senator Byrd,
yeah.
Believe me, Senator Byrd's my hero.
Yeah.
If he votes for this man, you know, I'll remember the good years.
Yeah.
And I will never vote for him again. And that includes this election coming up.
Yeah.
And I mean that. We have to stand up. The guy, who is that? Bob from
North Dakota?
Okay, wherever.
Yeah.
You know, good man. Good man. And which is not to say Jim isn't a good man.
I understand. But the thing is, I don't know if everybody understands, Wayne. I know you do. I know David in Tennessee does. I know that there are people within the reach of my voice right now, the majority of them understand that if we do not fight now, we will not be permitted to fight later.
No, we will not. These people are, you know, these people own the media. They own everything. You know, what's the first thing? If that was a Republican senator in New York that said something about a plantation, you'd have never heard anything about it.
Well, you didn't, and Jim was right. You didn't hear anything about it when Newt Gingrich made that remark 10 years ago, 12
That's
years
exactly
ago.
Right. That's exactly right. Now, they had poor Trent Lott, who, by the way, has decided he'll run again.
Oh, gosh.
What a surprise.
Oh, thank God for his service to the nation, Wayne.
What happened, you know, like.
Haley Barbour must have pissed him off or something.
Yeah, who the hell knows? But it's time to stand up and fight. You know, Hillary Clinton is not my favorite person.
No, I mean,
but what Hillary Clinton said is absolutely 100% right. Al Gore said, you know, this is what we have to do. You know, like,
well, you know, the Al Gore thing, Wayne, was met, as far as I can tell, with real mixed emotions yesterday. I was excited to hear what he said.
Real mixed emotions against the half-assed Democrat, pardon my language.
And you know, the urge, the very fundamental urge to wonder why he couldn't deliver that speech 6 years ago.
Well, he's growing up.
Yeah.
He's a young guy. I mean, well, you know, how old are you?
Well, yeah.
42 or something.
Yeah.
You're just a kid. It takes a long time to mature when you grow up.
That's true. And the thing is, you know, as a Democrat and as ostensibly a liberal or whatever, Gore can grow. Gore can change. You know, one of the things that, I forget which nominee it was that George Bush said about it. He said, you know, this.
Listen, when you get older, three, 4 years really makes a lot of difference.
Sure it does.
Al Gore was engulfed in the game a few years ago.
Yeah.
He has been allowed the time to. Al Gore didn't miss any meals.
Yeah, well, no.
He didn't have to collect cans and stuff.
Yeah, he wasn't standing on a corner with a cardboard sign,
right,
"Real Politic,"
yeah, exactly,
for food.
No, he got to sit back and look, you know. And I, well.
Yeah, but the
I hope the man runs for president.
I do too. At this point, at this point, yeah, you know, when I you know, I guess people, some people didn't understand my point about John Kerry this afternoon with Wolf Blitzer.
I'm going to tell you a story. Can I tell you a story?
Tell me a story.
The last election, okay, I was at my uncle's funeral the first day of the debates between George Bush and Al Gore. I was in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania at my uncle's funeral. We snuck in, this is after funeral house closed, and we were over at his house. And me and my cousins were inside. We're watching TV and watching the debates. And the debate started, and Gore said something, and Bush said something. No, this was Kerry.
Yeah, this was
Kerry, I'm sorry. And I don't know, George Bush made some really totally asinine statement. And then it switched to Kerry. And I looked at my cousin, I said, now see, this is where John Kerry should walk across the thing and slap him right in the face and say, you're a lying son of a gun.
Right.
And that's what Kerry had the opportunity to do that now. All he had to do was answer Wolf Blitzer's question and said, the president should be impeached.
But you would be surprised,
Wayne. A slap in the face, a punch in the mouth, and that's what George Bush needs. And John Kerry, and I have great admiration. He's a hero. He's a good man.
Heck of a senator.
Heck of a senator.
Should go on being a senator for as long as he wants to be a senator.
Drop out of the race. Please don't confuse things anymore. You know, you had your shot, and you had it twice. I mean, what if he answered that question the way you and I think he should have with Wolf Blitzer?
Well, then
you might be a contender. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All of a sudden he's fighting John Kerry.
Yeah, exactly. But
I know. The important thing with all of this, Wayne, is to remember Wolf Blitzer did not ask him, do you believe Bush should be impeached? That was not the question.
No, the question is, what is the
remedy for presidential lawbreaking?
And one word.
Impeachment.
And I didn't go to all them schools that John Kerry went to and all that.
Hell, me neither.
That education, even that you have. But I still believe impeachment is one word. Am I correct?
Yep.
Okay. One word answer. Period. Done.
Yeah, now the next question from Blitzer is, do you believe George Bush should be impeached? And then
yeah,
Senator Kerry...
That's also a one-answer question. Is it not?
Yes, it is. Oh,
word.
God, it is.
Yeah, see how smart I am?
You are.
And I didn't go to college.
52% of the...
I didn't belong to Skull and Bones or...
Right.
You know, none of that.
Yeah. Didn't have to ride the goatin or nothing.
No, I guess I got off pretty easy.
but see, 52% of the American people are already saying what John Kerry was afraid to say, Wayne.
I know, exactly. Well, and that's where, you know, and that's why it is time to, you know, to draw the line. And the line is Alito. As far as, this is the thing. This is the vote. You know, because we have to move on from here. And here's the only thing we have to judge you by right now. How are you going to vote on Alito? And if you vote for him, you are not a Democrat, and therefore we will oppose you.
Fine by me. I'm with you there. You know.
All right.
The American people want to talk impeachment. Like I said earlier, there are more people talking impeachment now than we're talking about impeachment of Nixon at the same relative time period. And I understand, you know, you do too. The realities of the situation are that we do not have the numbers in the House to get him impeached or the numbers in the Senate to convict. But the impeachment is an argument in favor of giving the House and Senate back to the Democrats.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we may not have the numbers now. But if we start pushing this issue, you know, we have an election coming up here pretty soon.
And I believe
it's in November.
Yeah. And our friend Joni tells us that, yes, indeed, Byrd did vote to confirm John Roberts.
Who did?
Byrd.
Oh, I know Byrd, yes.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure, but yeah, I thought he did.
No.
And
I
remember
know that.
You know, I mean, let's go ahead and put the cart in front of the horse and the all of that. Assume we get this, and I want, you know, because I want people to understand, Wayne, and you do, there is such danger to the Republic right now.
There are extreme danger.
Let's assume for a moment we get to impeach him and we get to try him in the Senate. Guess who presides over the trial of George W. Bush?
That would be Mr. Vice President Cheney?
No, that would be Mr. Chief Justice John Roberts.
Oh, that's even worse.
And John Roberts is deferential to the president already, and it would be nothing for the Senate to convene that trial and for him to say, I declare that all things done by the president are legal. This proceeding is null and void.
Then that would be a monarchy.
Precisely. Okay. You let Alito on...
Well,
game, set, match.
I've said on this program many times I don't own any guns. If they do that, I'm going to try to buy one. They'll probably have all the locks on by then.
I understand. Hey, Wayne, so good to talk to you.
You ever seen a mean Serbian without a gun? Especially old ones that ain't afraid to die. You know, I mean, you talk about gonads and emboldened and stuff. I mean, these are wheelbarrow type guys.
Can we just start the Serbian League and let people send a self-addressed stamped envelope to you, Wayne, and you know, I promise you that I want to fight back and join the Serbian League.
Are they going to send money?
I don't know.
Well, we need money, you know. You can give them my address, Bob.
All right.
I'll protect you, Wayne.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
You take care, brother.
All right, man.
Later.
Bye.
This is deadly serious stuff, but we got to laugh. We got to laugh, because you know what? They hate laughter, too. Some of these people, some of these god-awful Republicans, you can oppose by just pointing and laughing at them. Let's go to the phones. Tim is with us from Texas. Hey, Tim, you're head on.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. I'm actually a first-time listener. Was on Air America, and sometimes I think they get off base, and was glad to be able to find somebody else talking issues out there. I'm I'm a citizen without a vote, being a Democrat living in Texas.
Yeah, you kind of are, aren't you?
Yeah. And I wanted to just run an idea by you. I had written some emails to Hillary Clinton and Kerry and the Democratic National Committee 6-8 months ago. Told them basically that I don't really think that the party ought to consider supporting anybody that has been a proponent of the war. And obviously I targeted Kerry and Clinton because they have been supporting the war. And, you know, I said it in a nice way. I, you know, respect you, wish you well. But, you know, for the good of the party, I think that ought to be the strategy. The only thing I've ever gotten back, unfortunately, is solicitations for money.
For a donation. Thank you for adding your name to our mailing list.
Exactly. So I'm not sure how that differs maybe in any political party, but just wanted to run that idea by you.
Well, I think that's an excellent idea, Tim, and it's something that needs to be fleshed out as we communicate with these people. And, you know, I don't even know if they get anything more than the name and the address and add it to the mailing list. It may be what happened to you. But the fact of the matter is, this war is wrong. And we as Democrats have been scared to death to dare say so, because we're afraid we'll get swift-boated too. You know, that it is wrong. It is immoral. It is evil. It's time to, you know, never mind George Bush and his evildoers. You know, this is the face of real evil, attacking countries and killing 100,000 civilians who never did anything to us. And if we can't muster that moral and intellectual spirit to declare that that's illegal, we're done, aren't we?
Well, you know what's really weird to me? I was on a website last night, and it was a religious site, kind of religious, not exactly. Without getting into the specifics, basically, they were talking about search for God. And somebody was talking about, you know, the death of an animal. And, you know, I made the comment that basically I have trouble, you know, worrying about animals when, you know, we're responsible for killing so many people. We've got a commandment out there, and this is a religious site, that doesn't seem to have much gray area, thou shalt not kill. And
yeah, there's not. I mean, it's real simple. Don't.
No, nobody wants to talk about it, even on a site like a Search for God. So, I don't know, this is a weird country we're living in.
Well, it is, and it's so much of this is deliberate, and there's so much watch the birdie involved, Tim. You know, if you're new to the show, every Wednesday night, because I come from a fundamentalist upbringing, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, and every Wednesday night we have prayer meeting. And by what I mean by that is generally on Wednesday nights we talk about the really kooky, nutty, absolutely crazy stuff that comes out of the religion industry in this country. You know, we're probably the single most religious nation on earth, and we can't even muster up opposition to a war that, for God's sakes, there's no conceivable way to argue that Jesus would approve of. You know, because they're busy worrying about embryos and what a woman does with her own body. You know what I mean?
Well, it's an evil genius, apparently, that's orchestrated this and been able to sell it. But I'm a recovering Catholic. You know, I think that religion is a very personal issue. I don't know if I could ever get into a specific church, but what is, you know, what's going on with the religious leaders? Nobody's even talking about that.
No. No, I mean the whether it be the scandal in the you know, I mean we've the scandal in the Catholic Church, the story we had last week or week before last about the Southern Baptist minister who was caught soliciting gay sex in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and it just, you know, Jimmy Swaggart, you know, the dude is still on the air soliciting money from little old ladies after he was caught doing what he was doing. Bill O'Reilly was caught soliciting one of his show producers, offering to rub her down in her private places with falafel. And the guy is still on the air. And if any of that happened to a liberal, well, hell, they'd be screaming, get a rope, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, I guess I try to separate their private lives from their public lives, because you take a guy like Martin Luther King, even he did some great things, but, I mean, he, you know, he may not have lived it. I guess maybe being hard professionally. It's such a hard job that you have to take a break every once in a while. You look at Kennedy, you look at a lot of the great leaders have been that way.
Sure.
So I don't really focus on their personal lives, but the lack of
but they focus on ours.
Well,
you see what I'm saying? I'm not saying sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander necessarily, but hypocrisy is hypocrisy, isn't it?
Well, again, they take a public stance. Or they refuse to take a public stance on something that would be a no-brainer, in my opinion, in their public lives. And that's what upsets me.
Yeah. Well, I agree wholeheartedly. Tim, it's great to talk to you, and I hope we'll hear from you again.
Thank you.
Take care. Seriously, call it what it is, national attention deficit disorder. National aid, oh dear, NAD, N-A-D-D, national attention deficit disorder. We've got NADs. Oh, brother. Leave the button alone, Agnes. We do, though.
Don't make me push it.
But the time is coming that maybe we come out of it. You know, if activism does feel good. Writing, you know, like I sent a letter off to my Congressman Nick Rahal, like I said today, earlier. And I said, I expect to see your name on John Conyers' legislation. Period. Not will you please, I expect it. As an American and one who treasures the Constitution, I expect it. Did you know that today is, I believe, the 300th anniversary of the birth of Ben Franklin? You know, Sherman set the Wayback Machine for 1706. And that apocryphal line that's attributed to Franklin when he comes out of the Constitutional Convention and some citizen is standing there and says, Dr. Franklin, what kind of government do we have? And he answers, a republic, if you can keep it. And he wrote with some volume on the trouble we would have keeping it. Troubles now. Troubles here. Big trouble. What did Dr. Hunter S. Thompson say? Big darkness soon come. This is it. And Wayne is so correct. If we don't fight this fight right now over Alito, if we don't boldly dare to say words like impeachment now, we will never be heard from again. It was said earlier that if the other side will not let us get a breath. You got to understand, the other side fights dirty. You know, when the Republican National Committee can come out and accuse Al Gore of being a liar, a psychopath, well, you know, just all the same old sick litany of crap that they unloaded on him, and the media was complicit expanding on 6 years ago, when they can do it all over again today, We understand where we are. We don't have the media. We don't have the machine that they have. But you know what we do have? There are more of us than there are of the Republicans. We have our feet. We have our voices. And we you know, I hope people will use this program as a vehicle to vent and to think of ideas. And with any luck at all, out of that venting and out of those ideas will come the notion that we are emboldened and we are empowered and we can change things. Can we? I hope. I tell you what, we've got to take our break. When we come back, lots of phone calls. Your emails are equally welcome at bob@headonradio.com. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines. But there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
I buy the nicest things from a supermarket store. Vitamin land in marzipan, and I know just what they're all for. I've organized my useless life in a way I've never done before. Even visit the dentist now, but I've got no time for silly chitter-chatter. I'm on my way, 'cause while my blood's still warm and my mind doesn't matter, I'm hoping to stay. Because I've got a thing about seeing my friends and grow old. Oh, oh. I just can't wait to see that city on the moon with air-conditioned gardens that'll play your favorite tune. I'll see my feet upon that street if it's the last thing that I do. sweep on, sweep the roads to be there. But I've got no time for silly chitter-chatter. I'm on my way, 'cause while my blood's still warm and my mind doesn't matter, I'm hoping to stay, because I've got a thing about seeing my grandson grow old. Oh-ho, 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 oh-ho. See my feet upon that street if it's the last thing that I do. Heave on, sweep the roads to be there, but I've got no time for silly chitter-chatter. I'm on my way, 'cause while my blood's still warm and my mind doesn't matter, I'm hoping to stay, because I've got a thing about seeing my grandson grow old. Ho-ho, ho-ho.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back. Almost 6 minutes after the hour here in our remote, undisclosed location in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia. This comes our way, a new way to say screwed. The verb is Nelsoned, as in America got Nelsoned when Ben voted for Alito. Get it? Sure. And you know, it's this is one of those historical perspective things. There was a time when the name Nelson meant opposition to dictatorship and opposition to tyranny. Lord Nelson, who defeated Napoleon's navies at Trafalgar. And now Nelson is apparently going to be redefined as some sort of Vichy Democrat who doesn't have the spine to stand up to a fascist. Nelson is going to be redefined as appeaser. Please, Karl Rove, don't turn your crosshairs on me. Daggum, you know, just... Let's go back to the phones. John is with us. Hey, John, you're head on.
Hey, mate, how are you?
Doing good. What's going on down under?
Well, we'll get into down under in a second, but I feel like I got to mark this last couple of days in the calendar that I get the impression that between Al Gore and I've heard this factoid being thrown around a couple times recently. Back at the height of the American Revolution, 30% of the would-be new citizens still supported the crown.
I thought it was, I always heard that it was actually more than 50%.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I when I was hearing this, something like 30% being thrown around, it seems to be reminiscent of what we're going, you know, it seems to be what's going on now. You know, it's almost as though it's time for that second revolution. Like you said, you know, we're going to have to fight to keep this republic.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Al Gore, you know, you mentioned him, you know, battling the cancer and winning against that. But also, I mean, this guy had...
No, that was Spectre I was talking about, but that's not... No,
oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
But with Al having been screwed in 2000 the way that he was, being the first person to knowingly have the presidency ripped right from his hands in modern times that we've all known of, I think I was wondering if this speech was him testing the waters to say, look, he laid out the case for investigation brilliantly. I thought he hit all the major points that you could in an hour.
Exactly.
Not confusing people. But I'm wondering if this is a testing of the waters to say, hey, you know, it's time to wake up, and I might be considering coming back and taking back not for myself what should have been mine, but for the good of the country and the good of the people. I wonder if he's going to really, really step up, because what he went through, I would imagine it would have to take years, and only knows what kind of pressures and threats may have been put against him to stay quiet all this time.
John, I sincerely hope that this is him testing the waters. If it is, it was a very successful test run yesterday, I do believe.
Well,
and again, you got to remember, the Republicans have already done all the, I mean, and anything they do to him if he runs again, they've already done.
Yeah, that's exactly my thought. You know, I mean, here's a guy who has faced the devil already, and maybe and was forced to back down that one time, but he now knows that he can survive it, and I think he now knows. I really, you know, over the past few years, you got to wonder what he thinks about his choice of Lieberman back in 2000.
Oh God, you know, I hate to say it because sometimes people misconstrue my remarks on this. I knew that Al Gore was done when he nominated Lieberman.
I agree with you. I wish I could have seen it then, because the politics were so different at the time. It almost felt as though it was a move to, you know, the Middle East was a completely different situation than we're in now. And at that time, it may have been a what looked like a good move in image, you know, to move forward in the Middle East. You know, I think it might have been as superficial a move as that, but I start to get the impression that he was almost a plant from the beginning.
Well, part of, you know, I always thought that part of the reason Lieberman was chosen, John, had to do with the fact that Gore was trying to appease those people who were shocked, I tell you, that Bill Clinton was caught having oral sex. Because Lieberman was one of those literally holy Joe who ran out and talked about how immoral and evil that Bill Clinton was for engaging in a consensual sex act, and we know the rest of the litany.
I just wish he'd tear up his Democratic membership and just join the Republicans and be honest about where he stands. It's just ridiculous that he still is able to call himself a Democrat after what happened in 2000. I mean, if he really was into winning and into that ticket and into the Democrats, he should have been standing up to say that something was wrong, as opposed to just crawling in a hole and appeasing to those who said, don't count. I just can't. I really hope that Gore is testing the waters, and he may just be the guy, because I've been at a loss to think of who we could even look to.
Well, the thing that's been scariest, John, is the fact that everyone says, well, you know, it's Hillary's to lose. And
no,
if
way. No way. I think Hillary is a surefire loser, even if she were to win.
Exactly.
Because, you know, another thing, watching Al Gore, you know, I watched the speech last night in replay, and watching him, you know, someone in the chat room said, you know, seems as though Gore is more left. And I actually wonder if, since the system has been so skewed to the right over the past couple of decades, and to appease that side at the time 6 years ago, he didn't show how left he really was. But I think now, you know, as we've seen with him, you know, having everything taken away from him, it's time to show his true colors. I mean, we knew him to be one of the strongest environmentalists that the Democrats had, and we knew that if he had gotten in, he was going to go after, the corporate corruption and the payoffs going on with lobbyists and whatnot, which is one of the big things that the Republicans feared right from the outset.
Well, one of the things we will find out, even if he is not, if he's not gone, you know, real left, John, what we will find out is that the Republican Party apparatchiks will paint him as something just short of Karl Marx.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's their game. How many times have we heard Dear Leader refer to the fight against communism in his speeches, trying to justify this slaughter in Iraq?
Well, I really want people to take control of language again.
Yes.
That's half of the battle. You know, liberal is a socialist or a communist is wrong. I see that there's going to be a documentary shown here soon about just the use of the word race to describe the difference between, you know, African American, Italian American, and all this kind of thing is wrong, because race is, using the term race is divisive, and it's actually incorrect. And it's all these things of actually having to get the language back so we actually get back to having a real debate, because we don't have any real debate.
No.
No. And until we do, nothing's going to move forward. And I really hope that you know, I just hearing your callers taking each other on during the show,
yeah,
is showing,
yeah,
that I think we, and hopefully we can ride this swell and turn it into a tidal wave, you know, pick up on this energy, you know, listen to what was laid out, and listen to this bipartisan audience that stood there and applauded Gore for laying it out, you know, and laying it out straight, saying, you know, I don't care whose side you're on. This isn't right. This isn't democracy.
Well, I think you're right, John, because we've had 8 years for conservatism to save America like they promised. We've had 8 years of letting the corporate bosses run roughshod over the working class and over the middle class and try to destroy the middle class. We've had 8 years of giving the religion industry its absolute head. We've let them do everything they want to do, and it's turning into a disaster. Now, the question is communication. You're absolutely right. Can we communicate the fact that this method of the conservatives, the Republicans, whatever, is not going to work ever?
Yeah, and moving slow is not the answer either.
No.
This trying to do things gradually has done nothing but gradually move us backwards. I mean, you can just look at any subject matter.
John, you can't move slowly into universal health care.
This is so so true. As I watch the Australian system slowly being picked apart, which is one of the great things that has helped keep Australia's economy strong, is that people didn't have to worry about if they got sick, even if they were out of work, they could still go to the doctor.
Right.
But that's slowly being picked away as the Americans and the pharmaceutical companies get more and more influence. And what's interesting, and I'll have more of this hopefully on our show on Saturday, is some very, very interesting revelations on the oil for food scandal. And it seems that Australia's largest wheat or the Australian wheat exporter and Australia's largest oil agency were paying something like $200 million worth of kickbacks and fees to Saddam for supposed bills that were owed and broke sanctions. And it seems that our foreign minister was in on some of the meetings where the payments were discussed. So this could end up finally cracking through this right-wing government's they haven't looked at anything with the backing of this war in the media here at all. It's very blind. The Australian people don't even know where their troops really are, but all of a sudden, maybe this blind backing of this thing has all been because they have been profiteering on it just like the Americans. So this is going to be interesting to see how this breaks. It's all just kind of happened in the last 24 hours.
Well, that's I really hope you will flesh that out. That's Saturday night at 10 o'clock, right?
Yep.
FourthEstateRadio.com. Fourth is spelled out.
And you can we even bought the other one. You can even get there at the at number 4TH.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So anyway, great to talk to you, Bob.
Good to talk to you, John.
Right on, man. We'll talk to you soon, and just keep taking names, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And remember, FourthEstateRadio.com, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, Saturday night. Sunday night, it's All Things Reconsidered with our good friend and co-host of John's there on Fourth Estate Radio, Bruce Birch. That's also 10 o'clock Sunday night Eastern Time. AllThingsReconsidered.org. 17:30 past the hour. Let's go to Bernie because he's been waiting a long, long time. Hey, Bernie, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good. You?
Good. Hey, listen, I just emailed you a note with Ben Nelson's phone number in Washington.
Got it right here in front of me.
Okay. What I thought was that you could just give it out on the air, give one of the numbers anyhow, and have people call him. I called him twice today.
Good.
I'm going to call these people every day.
Until they get the idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got to do this. Because apparently they don't have the moral vision or ethical center to understand that they should be opposing this because it's the right thing to do. That's kind of pathetic, but it is.
My view of democracy is that a country's government should look after its people, and especially the people that have not got all that they need. The people that have all they need don't need me looking after. They can take care of themselves.
Well, yeah. And, of course,
they don't need the government to give them their goddamn welfare. Excuse my language.
That's okay. That's okay. That's okay. That's all right. No, you're right, though. The rich will always be able to attend to their own needs. It is the shrinking middle class and the lower class that we have to pay attention to, because those are the ones that will keep this nation alive if it is ever truly threatened. Those are the people who will be in the trenches. Those are the people who will do the fighting, not the scions of the Bush family.
Right, you are absolutely right. And you know what? In the last 3 weeks that I've been sort of paying attention to the way the ball is rolling, I think it's rolling in our favor. I do not think that President Bush will make it till 2008. In other words, he'll be impeached somehow. We have to get rid of him for any number of reasons. If you're a conservative, he's spending $6 billion a month.
that doesn't work with conservatism, does it?
No, it does not. It's not a conservative viewpoint. And Democrats who vote on a Republican ticket like Ben Nelson should go to resign their party status. They aren't Democrats.
Well, we've got to rebuild this party, and we've got to have some. You know, I don't want Ben Nelson to quit the Democratic Party. We can't afford to hand them a seat that they have. But we've got to teach Ben Nelson how, because apparently he's either forgotten or never knew in the first place. He has got to be taught how to be a Democrat. He's got to be taught what Democratic values are. Democrats have got to start talking about their basic values again. We've been dragged aside by talking about God and big rocks in buildings and whether what people do and when the lights go out. We got to talk about, never mind what happens when the lights go out, Bernie. It's what happens when the lights are you're trying to keep the lights on and the electricity going in the kitchen so you can feed your family, so you can and being able to go to a place where you can work in a safe environment and not run the risk of just dying just to make a buck.
Exactly.
These are the Democratic Party issues, and these are the issues that we win on.
There are so many things that I could talk about. I was very happy that Al Gore made the speech that he did. My hope is that he would back that with some sand. In other words, some grit in his soul. In other words, not back down. Tell things. What America needs is not to be pampered because we can't handle the truth. We can handle the truth. We just don't get it.
No, and the thing is, it's not a question of handling it either, Bernie. It's a question of what you just said, just getting it. You know, just turning away from Desperate Housewives, just turning away from American Idol, and reading. You know, like I said, I don't watch a lot of television because most of the time I want to throw something at the screen.
It's pretty frustrating.
You know, I read. Yeah, I remember Dear Leader saying that, well, you know, I don't like the media filter. You know, I do. I read, you know, God knows how many newspapers I read every day online.
Mm-hmm.
And I make my own decisions. I'm the filter. I'm the filter. Somebody else isn't.
You're an intelligent guy. Most of us are. We aren't stupid.
Yeah, look, no, our side is about is a good 40 IQ points on average ahead of the Republican Party. I mean, the reason they can motivate people with God, gays, guns, and that is because the Republican Party, you know, I'm not an elitist, Bernie, but they ain't that smart.
No.
If they can be motivated to the ballot box over what two people do when the lights go out, let's face it, they're dumb. And they're bigots.
It's horrible. I mean, we can rant all day long, but there are so many things they're doing. I mean, the whole infrastructure of the United States is falling apart as we speak. And the very philosophy of these neocons is to let that happen. And I have no idea what they think is going to happen after it falls apart. But,
well, some of them don't believe that there's going to be an after because, you know, we're just 2 days from Jesus coming back. And I'm not trying to be, you know, but they believe that. Honest to God, they believe that, Bernie.
I hear you talk about you being a fallen Baptist.
Recovering. We like to say recovering. We go to the little meeting. I stand up and say, you know, hi, I'm Bob Kay, and I used to be a Baptist.
Well, I you know, life is a spiritual journey, and a few years ago I became a born-again Christian. And when 9/11 happened, and I listened to the rhetoric, I said, okay, that's it. This is not the way it is. And I just quit. I mean, there's a better way to go than that.
Yeah.
That fundamentalist, provincial, narrow-minded viewpoint that is so out of whack with what is that it's scary.
Well, I mean, I started getting a little leery of the fundamentalism even as a kid when they started talking about because I was a kid. Do you remember the Living Bible, Bernie?
No, I
okay.
Don't.
Well, that came out in the 70s, and it was a Bible that was translated into sort of modern English. And I remember being castigated by the church elders for having the Living Bible because God only speaks to us through the King James Version.
I mean, the things that they view as evil, the very things, dancing and music and literature, and I mean, the opening up of our souls, they want to close it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was dancing, there was music, all of that stuff in the time of Yeshua. And, you know, he's not out there inveighing against dancing and music. He's inveighing against watching people starve.
Yes, exactly.
There, so that's evil.
That's evil. The morality of America right now is, I don't know how to say this. The things, a bare breast is immoral, and the killing of an Iraqi is moral. That's a good thing.
In what sort of opposite world does that work, Barney?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to know the people that believe that way. I have a hard time considering them my fellow Americans.
I do too. I have total contempt for anybody that thinks that George Bush is a man to be admired. In fact, I'm kind of estranged from my own family because they're such conservatives. And that's sad.
And it's, well, that's why I keep saying from time to time, and I understand there's a big difference between arguments and guns and bullets, but the other side has already started the civil war in this country, Bernie.
Yes, they have.
They have deliberately engaged in the breaking of families. What you just said about you and estrangement with your family is a thousand times over across this country, because there will be a couple of members of a family that won't speak to the other group because the other group's a bunch of fundy weirdos.
Well, I mean...
And I mean no disrespect to your family.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Your total viewpoint on life, the way I see it, is that you care about humanity.
Right. John, who called just before you, was talking about how divisive and how improper a description of race is if you're going to talk about African versus Asian versus, you know, Northern European or whatever. There's only one race, Bernie.
That's right, the human race.
Yeah.
We all come from the same mother. The only reason we have color in our skin, if we have it at all, is our position on the earth in relation to the equator. In other words, the farther south into the sunnier climes you got, where there was a lot of sun, the darker your skin to protect you.
Exactly.
That's
I get a sunburn under the refrigerator light bulb. That's how, you know, that's how pink I am.
And you're a whitey-tatey, huh?
Yeah, and it's because 100,000 years of Kincaids were up on the windswept moors of Scotland, where there ain't talk about it, ain't no sunshine when she's gone, ain't no sunshine. Bernie, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I've got the phone number here, and I'm going to give it out.
Okay, Bob, thank you for talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
And Bernie was kind enough to look up these phone numbers. Get the pencil. I'll repeat it. This is Ben Nelson's phone number in Washington, D.C. That's a foregone conclusion, but we do it anyway. 202-224-6551. Again, that number is 202-224-6551. Out in Nebraska, in Omaha, it's area code 402-391-3411. 402-391-3411. That's the Omaha office. The Lincoln office is area code 402-441-4600. And if you're so inclined, let them know at all three offices. Give them something to do. Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The blue shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck. Have
Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts. 100 flights aboard company jets. 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels. $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Welcome back. This night's flown by. Thanks ever so. An email from our friend Spike. He says, Gonzo greetings. Two things. One, most Americans are focused on the war in Iraq and an exit and Beltway corruption scandals. While I love the fact that Americans are waking up, the economy is still not an issue. My old man is a union construction worker in New York City, Local 12. He's been out of work for about a year now with this great economy. When the Wall Street Journal claims how new home building, like suburban sprawl, McMansions, that kind of thing, is keeping the economy strong, they never mention how many are now non-union and mostly illegal aliens. Hence why the neocons are the most liberal with the Mexican floodgates, he notes. That hurts, not helps, our economy. And I'm hurting to find work in the city of Easton, PA, in the Lehigh Valley, and our classified listings for jobs can't fill half a page. I deliver pizzas for peanuts, and lately no one's ordering. after hearing Al Gore suddenly find his pair, I have this Dr. Hunter S. Thompson quote to give you. The main problem in any democracy is that crowd pleasers are generally brainless swine who can go out on a stage and whoop their supporters into an orgiastic frenzy, then go back to the office and sell every one of the poor bastards down the tube for a nickel apiece. Thanks, Spike. Too much truth in that. Way too much truth. Yeah, we see some of the same things here in West Virginia. There will be a newspaper story about every 2 or 3 weeks. Well, the coal companies are unable to fill all of their positions. The coal companies need experienced coal miners. What do they need the experienced coal miners for? To go and get sagoed, that's what. There are experienced coal miners all over the state of West Virginia who would gladly go back into the earth, but only if they have the protections of the United Mine Workers of America. There's a story today. I know the news cycle's over and we're supposed to forget Sago. We were promised that there would be open hearings on what the hell went wrong. Guess what? It ain't going to happen. Somewhere along the way, they'll have an open public meeting so that the public may express their opinions. No, no. You see, in the laws for the Mine Safety and Health Administration, there's this clause that says, you don't have to make them public, but you may. Now, see, that's a bass-ackward way of writing a law, if you ask me. With something as dangerous and dirty and environmentally nightmarish as the mining of coal, all investigations shall be public. That's the way you write that law. Okay? But the way it's written, the Mine Safety and Health Administration can say, well, we choose to not have this investigation be public. And when the investigation isn't public, here's what doesn't happen. There's no subpoena power. There's no oath. There's no ability to compel the production of documents. There is no public oversight. There's no newspaper. That's what they're going to do with the Sago investigation. Aren't you charmed? Why would you make a decision like that? Why would you make a choice like that? Well, for the same reason that there's a need for coal miners in West Virginia. Because they need the coal miners, because the good coal miners, the coal miners with the experience, the coal miners with the capacity to get the job done, will not go into the death holes of Massey Energy and International Coal Group. Because they understand that Massey Energy and International Coal Group are just fancy words for a lousy, stinking, dirty, rotten, lonely way to die. So you got that. So this, the economy's bustling. Bug spray, it's bustling. Tell that to the thousands, the hundreds of thousands of workers who have had their pensions stolen from them. Tell that to the wives of the retired workers who were in the middle of cancer treatment when the health care benefits went away. Tell them. If Dear Leader had the guts to speak to a crowd that wasn't hand-picked. Wouldn't you love to see the look on his face when one of those screwed people just went up and said, I want to thank you, George. Thank you so much for this hustling, bustling 21st century economy. Thanks, brother. But of course, it'll never happen because a Bush doesn't live in the same world with you and me. They are, after all, our betters. And we damn well better learn it. Or not. I'm up for not. How about you? Let's go back to the phones. His name has been taken many times in vain this evening. Jim is back with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Why has my name been taken in vain so much?
I don't know. You struck a chord with somebody. You have an ability to do that.
Well, I'm glad I have some talent, really.
Well.
I have only this to say. I can't see the world through another person's eyes, and they can't see the world through my eyes. And the same thing goes with the other five senses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly have a lot of compassion and feeling for the man who took my name in vain. How many have there been?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I've had a couple of emails. There are a couple of calls.
And exactly what is it that I've said that is so objectionable?
Well, Jim, I mean, it was said on the show. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I can't sit here and recount conversations from an hour ago. I mean, it was put out there for the entire wide world to hear. So, you know, I mean, it's bad radio for me to sit and just rehash it.
Oh, you could, you know, give me a pricey, but that's fine. But I can give you a pricey of how I feel, basically. I feel how I feel, and how I feel is based upon logic and reason. And, you know, I would not participate in your show if I did not feel as though I had a common bond with you.
Mm-hmm.
Differ on a number of things and on methodology, and we differ on a lot of things.
Yes, absolutely. This is not the Amen Bob show, and nor was it ever intended to be.
Oh, absolutely. And people can disagree without being disagreeable.
Certainly.
And as far as the gentleman who wanted my phone number or wanted me to give him his phone number, you know, I can see no purpose in that because I think this man obviously is suffering from some type of post-traumatic stress.
No, don't diagnose anybody over the air, Jim. That's just wrong, okay?
But,
no, what we had was a very impassioned statement of disagreement with you. That doesn't mean there's something wrong.
But you didn't let me finish, because I suffer from the same thing.
I understand, but do you get what I'm saying?
And I have volunteered that to you over your program on several occasions.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I'm not ashamed of that. But I have not allowed that to brutalize me to the point of not being able to understand, whereas in Southeast Asia, we made a serious mistake. Just as in Iraq, we are making a serious mistake. That is my point, sir.
I understand. You know, there is an entire brutalized generation in this country. After the First World War, Jim, Hemingway was sitting in Gertrude Stein's salon in Paris, and she said, "Oh, you are all a lost generation," and it was terribly, terribly romantic. And the World War II generation came home, and they were shattered and broken and hurt. But there was, in each instance, there was a real and genuine desire on the part of the American government to try in some way to help.
Well, you know,
the Vietnam generation was shattered, and there was and they were left to wander the streets, and the same thing is happening again.
Yeah, well, I mentioned to you last night exactly how much a 30-day war costs.
Yeah, $4 billion a day, I think you said.
$1 billion a month.
Whew. That's amazing. That's amazing.
I think in light of what I've said, and because I don't believe in storming the Winter Palace, the way some people do, doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that my position is without being able to for me to be able to mount a considerable defense. Because, I mean, my friend, all these things that we're talking about have not happened overnight. They're not going to be solved overnight. The need for health care in this country is a problem that has been with us for how long, Bob?
No, it's been getting worse and worse and worse. Bill Clinton tried to fix it early in his presidency.
And who opposed him, basically, in this thing?
Democrats and Republicans. The Congress opposed him.
As far as corruption in government is concerned, I mean, what about Rostenkowski? What party did he belong to?
Oh, sure. Have you ever heard me say that the Republicans have a lock on corruption?
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, like I say, you know, this thing has become everything. And the point I'm trying to make is we have become so polarized and so divided. And there is so much partisanship now that I just really can't envision any type of real cooperation at all until we have a complete change in the personnel, staffing, representatives, and other types of positions of the government.
I understand that, Jim, and I guess the question I'm asking is do we have to wait till this entire corrupt generation has died off in Congress? That's not a feasible solution for me. because corruption breeds corruption.
Well,
and little junior congressmen will come in and get corrupted, and they'll corrupt the next generation, and it just goes on, and it never breaks. There is never a break in the cycle that allows us to fix anything. Do you see my point?
I do, and I ask you this. What is your solution to it?
Well, like I said, I'm a simple guy.
I mean,
I want...
Vote them out in 2006. Out in 2008. Within the framework of our system.
Well, I believe in working within the framework of the system, but the point is, I think this is where the real nut of the matter is that people want to start working on it. We don't have to have instantaneous solutions, but we have to see people willing to stand up and fight. It like the quote from our friend Spike about whipping up the crowd and then going back to the office and selling them down the tubes. That has got to end. And frankly, because I'm a simple guy and because I do believe that the simple solution is often the most elegant and the most likely to succeed, thou shalt take no money from nobody is a darn good place to start.
Well, if you...
I mean, how much... Jim, you've been inside D.C. culture. How much does a congressman make?
Well, okay, fine. If you wish to be Alexandrian and cut the Gordian knot, then do it.
I don't see any other solution because half measures, as you pointed out, half measures are just weaseled around.
Well, the only thing I said was this, and the way I can see to change it is to replace these people and get rid of them. And the only way we can do that is not to elect them.
Well, I agree with that.
And also, I think they could definitely not allow former congressmen to be lobbyists.
Well, there's a start. Screw 60 days. Screw 1 year. You can't do it.
Well,
they're getting a pension. They're getting a great pension. It's not like they need the work.
Well, what I'm saying is they should not allow, half the people in Congress who leave and retire become lobbies. Now, they could pass the law stopping that.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that would be a...
It's another one of those simple, elegant solutions. Thou shalt not.
Well, I simply said that they could stop congressmen from being lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, now these guys, they don't have to be a lobbyist, get out there and make a lot of money, and there are other ways.
It's the path of least resistance, Jim.
I know. But what I'm saying is it's a very complex problem. And, I have seen problems in history solved in the Alexandrian method by cutting the Gordian knot. And then I've just seen the whole thing just collapse, and it really has created a situation much worse than the one that was before. And that's my position from history, that's all.
I appreciate it. Jim, we got to roll on. Thanks. Take care. Now, I did want to get this. I'm not going to save this till tomorrow night. Understand what we're dealing with here. This isn't, this isn't some story of high corruption. This isn't Randy Duke Cunningham taking millions of dollars in bribes, living on a luxury yacht in the Potomac Basin and a $2 million home in San Diego. This isn't that. This is just your government at work. Dateline Knoxville, Tennessee. Christian Wire Service. The National Embryo Donation Center announced See what happens? The National Embryo Donation Center announced that it is a partner in a $309,000 Embryo Adoption Awareness Grant funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We'll just take a minute while that sinks in. Now, this isn't... Remember, it's your money. Talking about the... it's your money. This is your money. This is your money being used to fund a religious organization because the National Embryo Donation Center is tied in with the Baptist Health System Foundation in Knoxville. They're the primary recipient of the Health and Human Services grant. Let me show you how freaking reasonable I can be. Let's assume for a moment that embryo donation is a sort of faith-neutral thing that we want to happen because the poor little embryos are sitting there in the freezing cold liquid nitrogen without no toboggans nor scarves. And we just feel bad for those little embryos. Poor little embryos. And, you know, you want to have an organization where people, you can act as a clearinghouse for those embryos. Okay. I got no problem with that. No. I got no problem with that. That's not what this damn grant is about. $309,000 not to support the embryo program, but to support the awareness program about the embryo program. This is $309,000 to the Baptist Health System Foundation of Knoxville, Tennessee, so that they can print flyers. Does your embryo need a home? We want to be your home. Yes. I see the lady with the red hair and the microphone has her hand up.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
We were talking about this earlier, and I told Bob, because I can't have any more. I'm sorry, guys. I figured out what caused it, and I stopped it. But if I would go and say, I want to take one of these embryos and give it life, what do you think my chances are that they are going to inseminate me? I have to go through a background check and make sure what sex I prefer and all of this crap. And on top of it, it's done by a religious organization.
And you know what they call them? They got a special name for them, Agnes.
They would not
They're
give
snowflakes.
Me.
They're snowflakes.
That's
what we call the embryo babies. They're snowflakes because he... Oh, God. Now, okay, you see...
They wouldn't give me one. Okay.
Us? You? Us?
What are you going to do, gestate it in a box?
Uterus? I don't need no stinking uterus. No, assume from... This is $309,000 for the billboards and the telephones so that they can call 1-800-FALL-OUT-BABY. This has nothing to do with... This is because they're afraid that Michael J. Fox might stop shaking like a dog trying to pass a peach pit from Parkinson's if they don't save the embryos and keep them away from them evil, malicious stem cell researchers. There are 100,000-plus real, live, human beings dead in Iraq because people like this voted for George Bush, and we got $300,000 to throw at them so they can advertise thawing out Frosty Baby.
It's your money. By God, it is.
This... $400 toilet seat, $600 screwdriver in the military. No! We got $309,000 to front to the Baptist Health System Foundation of Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, but Bob, what if one of them embryos cures cancer?
Oh, God. And you know, now understand, there is going to be bigotry involved with this. There is going to be this is $309,000 worth of bigotry. Because what did we hear about the adoption agency that we threw a few $100,000 at down south a year or so ago? They wouldn't let the Catholics adopt. And it's going to be this way. Well, I'm sorry. This is the Baptist Health Foundation. Are you going to raise a healthy Baptist baby? What? You're a Unitarian? Screw you. Get out of here. We're only raising Baptist embryos.
No, you made a point there. You said, what if this embryo is the one that cures cancer? But didn't they just totally do away with embryonic stem research?
Well, that could be the embryo that cures cancer, but not that way. That's not okay. We need people to suffer and die with cancer if this embryo is going to cure it that way.
See, I'm a proponent of it, so this just really puts me on odds anyway, so I lose.
Jeffrey Keenan, M.D., Medical Director of the National Embryo Donation Center, noted, "This grant will help reach and inform those families who are facing a dilemma regarding their stored embryos. It allows parents to make a life-affirming decision about their unused embryos while offering the miracle of childbirth to a couple who has experienced the anguish of infertility." Can I point out, please, please can I point out the fact that you don't just install one embryo into a childless woman. You install 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, hoping that one will take. What happens to the other 11 when they go down the toilet?
Actually, you tend to get litters. Really?
Well, yeah, if you...
2, 3, 4 really
well, no, if
do
you,
come
if,
after
if
that.
If you give them the funky drugs that get you in Time magazine and the lifetime supply of Pampers and stuff like that. But no, you're going for one, and you got to kill a dozen.
Well, you know, that's worth it, Bob, because, you know, that's one more soul for Jesus.
309,000 dollars. How far would $309,000 go with a Veterans Service Outreach Office? How far would $309,000 go on the Gulf Coast? How far would $309,000 go to adequately fund MSHA so SAGO doesn't happen again?
But no, that's $309,000 to put up billboards about snowflake babies.
And these are the people who are watching our money because they're fiscal conservatives. Well, that's the show tonight. Thanks, everybody. What a trip you made it. Thanks to all the new callers. Thanks to all the regular callers. Thanks to those who listen via the live stream. Thanks to those who listen by iTunes or radiopower.org. We appreciate you all, and we appreciate everyone who helps bring the show along. The show, of course, was produced tonight by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. It was engineered, the studio set up by Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch, our very dear friend, manages the stream and the archives at whiterosesociety.org, and he never sends a bill, so you got to do the right thing by him just because you're that kind of a good person. The show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they are building the American dream. And always...